and welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to episode 40 of Revitalize and Replant. We will be talking about a subject that is near and dear to my heart because I'm not very good at it. We'll be talking about receiving criticism, and particularly if you are in the context of receiving that criticism right now, whether you're in an established church or just a church plant, it will apply. It specifically applies to those who are revitalizing and replanting churches. I am joined today with the eminent, the indisputable, indisputable leader of the revitalization and replanting movement, the one to whom all heads turn when we mention the R and R phrase, Mark Clifton. Mark, good to have you back.
Delighted to be here.
Yeah,
thank you.
And as always, the voice of Rainer on Leadership Podcast and Revitalize and Replant Podcast, Jonathan Howe. And Jonathan is going to introduce a question from Brett.
Yeah, we got Brett's question today. He says that he hears us speak a lot about conflict. What are some keys to keep in mind as you deal with conflict and the hard work that comes during a replant or revitalization?
And you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to step out of the room.
Okay.
I'm going to let the rest of you handle this because I'm 62 years old. I'm still trying to figure out how to get this thing right.
Well, but I think it's a process. I don't think it's something you ever, because every situation that you deal with conflict is different.
Yes.
So there are different things. So, you know, it's just some principles that you got to kind of understand that you're going to get criticism and
but it's going to be hard days. What I'm saying, Jonathan, thick skin implies that you have developed calluses. And I am just as thin-skinned as ever.
Yeah.
And I just have to deal. However, I will say this. The advent of social media and the blogosphere over the last 10 to 15 years has helped.
Because it has helped.
Okay. It has helped. Now, it didn't for a season.
I was wondering.
But because there are so many comments out there, because criticisms are ubiquitous, I saw four or five just coming into work against me for a blog post I did on social media. You've probably seen them too. And because they are just so frequent, I've gotten to the fact, well, you know, that's just another one. So actually, the onset of the ubiquitous critic has really made me handle it better.
I don't understand that because I don't ever get any criticisms for what I write. So, you know, maybe there's something.
Well, people have to read it.
Maybe.
Oh.
Wow.
Ow.
That was too easy. Sorry.
Ow. That's right.
We needed Brad Wagner for that one in The Shape of Faith to Come.
Sorry. Oh, yes. Or Identity.
Yes. Oh, wow. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, when you're in a revitalization, it is like, as I said before, it's like a losing team, and it's the locker room in that losing team. People are pointing fingers. They're not happy at the coach.
Wow.
That's a good metaphor.
That is really good.
You know, you're 0-12, and now whose fault is it? There's not much camaraderie in there. And let's say then you get called to be the new head coach. You really risk everything going there. And frankly, I tell guys that. If you're going to go to a dying church or a church in need of a real strong revitalization that's got incredibly systemic conflict in it and has been on a downward spiral for a long time, you know what? You're risking your reputation as a pastor, as a minister. It may take a long time for that to come back, and your reputation may take a hit for a while. I mean, you may have several losing seasons before you even break even, and some guys just can't handle that. So I think you just have to know that going in, that if this church wasn't laden with conflict, it wouldn't be in the need of revitalization that it is, and that the adversary, Satan, is obviously the author of all of this conflict.
One word I would have to potential revitalizers or replanters is kind of the same word I had with church planters. Mark, you remember when church planting was the coolest thing to
yes.
do? And it still is.
Say, it kind of still is.
It kind of still is the cool thing because all you have to do is grow a beard, mm-hmm. find a coffee shop, mm-hmm. Usually shave your head. Mm-hmm. Usually.
Three for three.
Yeah, just be cool.
Only get some pallets with Christmas lights for the backdrops.
They're
four for four.
So it was always the cool thing to do until you plant the church, and all of a sudden you realize this isn't as easy as I thought it was. How much more so with revitalizing and replanting? Because I will say this, I call this the Clifton cause.
All right.
Mark Clifton is making revitalization and replanting cooler.
Oh,
because you are giving, first of all, biblical rationale for what happens, and secondly, you are giving very specific guidelines, and you're walking with people through this. So you're the R&R rock star. And so as people are hearing you talk about this, there are some out there, erroneously so, mm-hmm. not your fault, mm-hmm. who are saying, I'm going to do this. That would be really cool mm-hmm. and fun.
Mm-hmm. No.
Not always.
No. I always tell them, hey, I think I had a guy yesterday. I get guys every day that call me and say, hey, I think I want to replant. I want to revitalize. I had a guy call the other day and say, look, here's what happened in the first church I was at, and he told me how it failed. And here's what happened at the next church, and he kind of told me how it failed. And here's what happened the next. And each place, Dr. Rainer, he had a reason. These people wouldn't do this. They wouldn't do that. They didn't listen to this. And he said, you know, and I really think I need to be a revitalizer. And I said, dude, you've been in three churches that you couldn't revitalize because you couldn't deal with the conflict. I mean, if you can't deal with the people in the if they're going to follow your leadership and think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, then you're not going to have any conflict.
But by the way, that's a boomer metaphor.
By the way, I am from Chillicothe, Missouri, the home of sliced bread. Look it up. Google it. It's true.
I believe you, Mark. I mean, there's nothing you say I don't believe.
There you go. But they will create. We say this in replanting all the time. You ready? We say that it's like rescuing a dying swimmer. They need to be rescued. Once they get to the shore, they're going to be happy about it, but they're probably going to beat you up all the way. You know, they're just going to fight you every step of the way.
I've given this story before, but I saw that with my dad, my late father.
Okay.
We were at Panama City Beach mm-hmm. on the white sands on Thomas Drive before it was this overdeveloped bastion of concrete, and we were just enjoying the time, and there's a woman out there drowning, and she's screaming, and she says three words, I am drowning.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people standing around. I guess I'm 5, 6, mm-hmm. you know, early memories. People standing around. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? I'm drowning. And I'm kind of looking around, and there's this blur of a figure that goes by me. It's my dad.
Okay.
And my dad was a World War II hero, and this is just who he was. And he jumps into the water, and he grabs the woman, and she is knocking the fire out of him, mm-hmm. just clawing at him and hitting him. And he finally gets her back on the beach, And you know, he's got a few scratches on him, and he was a man of few words. I don't know why I appreciate that so much, but he was a man of few words. So he saw that she was all right. Someone said to my dad as he's walking away, why did you save her? Because she's drowning. Mm-hmm. Just like that.
Yep.
Wait, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, no one else would.
Oh, right.
There was probably 20, 30 people watching a woman saying, I am drowning.
Yeah.
And he just rushed out. So they were kicking and screaming the whole way, and yet he still had enough compassion, had enough love to rescue the woman. Same analogy, right?
And they're going to criticize you, and they're going to say really hurtful things to you. They're going to do that to your wife. They're going to get at you through her, maybe through your kids. It can get really bad because the adversary is behind all of this, and he's going to do that. You simply cannot take it personal. And you really do have to put on the full.
I'm sorry, Mark. I'm not listening to you.
I know.
All right. So that is the first point, though. Church members will criticize you as you lead change.
Yes, they will. Absolutely. Because obviously they don't want to change. The adversary doesn't want them to change. And how many times have we said before, so many times these people's lives, everything else is changing at breakneck speed. And here, this one place, this church, everything looks the same. It smells the same. It feels the same. Same things on the wall, same pews, same silk plants, same everything. And they find great comfort in the sameness of that. All right? You have to understand that. They find great comfort in the fact that this place looks the same, feels the same, smells the same. Everything else in my life is maybe spinning out of control, but this is the same. And now you want to come and change this too. And as I've said on many different podcasts, your first job is to help them release that idol of sameness in that church and embrace Jesus.
Idol of sameness. I love that.
Ooh, the idol of sameness.
You
got to love Jesus more than you love the things in your church.
That's two good ones.
By the way, I did write a little book on leading change in the church. And it's called Who Moved My Pulpit? And we've mentioned that in the past. And again, that's a little bit of self-promotion. But I do think it would be a decent guide for those who are leading change.
You need to tell Mark about what Sam did. He reverted on the pulpit.
Oh, yeah. You mean he brought in the old pulpit?
Yeah, brought the old one back.
Yeah.
Mark's
heard the story in a previous episode, but I'll tell for those listeners who were not with us a couple episodes.
For the thousands of new listeners
that we got since two episodes ago. Sam is leading a revitalization. Yes. You remember the story in Bradenton, Florida.
Right.
He loves those people, and he's been at it. He's about to finish 3 years. I said, about to finish 3 years. That's really going to get started. But his whole theme is, of course, not of course, his whole theme is reaching our neighborhood for the nations. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible thing. And so they had a major emphasis, and there was a video that he showed, and he featured all the older members, maybe even founding members. But the thing that really took the breath away from those who knew is he brought the pulpit back from the most beloved pastor. And I haven't seen it, but it's my understanding it was a massive edifice, a big desk, a big desk that was there. So for those of you who heard the story a couple of episodes ago, thank you. Thank you for being patient with me. But I think Jonathan's right. It was worth repeating.
All right. Number two, family and friends may think you're crazy. Now, this is interesting. This is something we don't really talk about. Like getting criticism from those who like love you and know you the best.
Well, we say all the time, if you're looking to be a revitalizing pastor, one thing has to happen, and you have to have spousal perseverance.
Yeah.
In church planting, we call it spousal cooperation, but we use the word perseverance in revitalization because it's even harder on the spouse. Again, you have people that will come to that spouse and begin to talk to her or about what's going on with your husband and why is he doing these kinds of things. But also, sometimes the spouse's family will talk to her and say, you know what? That church is declining. It's been declining since he came. And how come you guys are there? And why is he more successful than he is?
Yeah,
I've heard that. And they get that even from their own relatives. And so from that and aspect of it, it can become really, really stressful.
This is family day for me. So I've told the story about my dad. My mom was a very strong-willed woman, very, very outspoken. My dad was strong and quiet, but my mom was this very outspoken person. And she never had an opinion she didn't articulate, and she usually articulated several of them to me. My mom, I was a fifth-generation banker, and so I had the quote-unquote safe job. And I was in the corporate world, and the history of our family is we'd all done well in the business world. She was just very proud of me, and I came home one day and I said, I need to talk to you. She said, is anybody sick? I said, well, I think you're going to be. I said, I'm going to quit the bank. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to seminary to go to vocational ministry. Oh, my goodness. She said, that is just absolutely crazy. I can't believe you're doing that.
She went to Auburn, so.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
So there was a lack of comprehension and knowledge. And she just went off on me. Now, I said, Mom, I know you love me, but you don't need to be worried about me. She said, I am not worried about you. I'm worried about my grandkids. Who's going to take care of them as you go and take this vow of poverty?
Yeah.
I said, well, it's really, I'm not going necessarily that path. She said, you will be poor because I will not support you. You understand me? And so my mom was very, very, very strong on that. She thought I was crazy to go into ministry. How do these family members think when you go to a declining or dying church?
Right.
Why would you go there?
And then when you're there for, as often we say, 3 to 5 years before you really begin to see any
exactly
improvement. So year two, year three, your friends, your family, your spouse's family are beginning to question your competency. And then you really have to fight against that.
Well, this is also a good reminder to those who have friends at churches like this. Don't criticize them.
That's right.
And be supportive.
And don't keep asking them how many they're running. You know, how many you got this week? How many did you have last week? You don't ask that at all. You know, ask them what the Lord's doing in their life and how he's making himself known in their ministry and those kinds of things. But the way we are so quick to judge a person's worth in ministry by whether or not they've increased the attendance a certain amount in a couple of years is just not right. And it's gotten us in a lot of messes that we're in today. It
exactly.
just takes a long time to revitalize a church.
And therein, at the 3 to 5 year mark, if you haven't seen significant turnaround, you are a failure, therefore you leave, and we have the short-term pastorate, and the problem is exacerbated.
That's exactly right.
All right, next point, you probably won't get much recognition for your work. Kind of, we touched on this earlier.
Yeah, you probably won't. And that is changing somewhat. And listen, that's part of my passion every day when I wake up.
Why you are the rock star, the R&R rock star, Revitalize and Replant. I am in the presence of Mark Clifton, who is lending credibility to the whole idea of Revitalize and Replant. Mark, do you have anything to say?
If you're 90, if your gathered worship is less than 200, then you're over 90% of all churches in North America. You are not a small pastor in a small church. church, and you're a normative-sized church and a normative-sized congregation, and don't let the adversary think that you're not worthy because you're in a small church and other churches are so much bigger and all of that kind of stuff. All of that has to be fought against. And I look for stories every single day. I look for stories where God, look, I got this thing on my phone right now. It's an amazing picture I got the other day of this completely dirty, rusted out, filled with dust baptistry that this church had for years. I mean, it just looked awful. You know, a little bit of water in the bottom and all that. And then right next to it, a picture.
Snakes crawling around?
Yeah, not quite. But then right next to it, a picture of this young pastor in there with this young man, and they've cleaned out the baptistry, and they're using it again for the first time
in
5 years. Now, I don't care if they have 30 in that congregation or 400 in that congregation. I care that that is happening. And so we need to celebrate that. And so really trying to help guys realize that, man, just celebrate. Look, I am so convinced of this. When we get to heaven and we see the impact of our ministry, we're going to be blown away about some guys who never preached to more than 50 or 75 people that had an incredible impact because that is where God wanted them, and that's how he wanted to use them. And for his purposes, he's done some amazing things through their life, and they're probably not even going to know it until they get to glory. And I just try to say that everywhere I go. So I'm trying to change that narrative in every possible way I can.
You know, about 3 months ago, Billy Graham died. And when Billy Graham died, it just caused a flood of memories to come back. Some of them are the rare and few times I had to be with him personally, but most of them are just some of the things he said. And I remember one of the interviews with him. They said, "Mr. Graham, what do you think it's going to be like when you get to heaven?" And everybody was waiting for the glory and the colors and the presentation of this place that no one can describe. And he says, "It's going to be, I'm not going to try to imitate him. It's going to be amazing to me to see how many people are ahead of me receiving the accolades from God for their ministries. They will be the unknowns." And he says, "People think I'll be at the front of the line because I've preached to millions and I've spoken to kings and presidents." He said, "No, I am not by far way down the line." Powerful influence he was, but he recognized that it's the unknowns that are really often great in God's eyes.
Yeah, amazing.
All right, number four is one that I don't think a lot of people talk about or realize, but it's a real problem. Peers may have a condescending attitude toward you.
Again, how many are you running? Are you growing? What's your youth ministry look like? What's your children's space look like?
And they value you as a, well, not as a minister, but they rank you in their minds of where you are in success for your ministry based on how the church is doing. Well, you know, he went there and the church has kind of gone downhill. Don't worry about him. He's, you know, it kind of write you off.
Absolutely. And when you go to a place like that, you've just got to be ready that some of the peers, and you know, when you ask guys, you're served in isolation. And first thing we say to guys who are doing revitalization, man, you can't serve in isolation. Who do you lean into? What other pastors are in the area? And many of them don't lean into anybody because they're sort of ashamed and they feel like they get judged for how poorly this church is doing or how much conflict it is here. And they don't feel like they can be open and transparent. And I think it's very important for us to have an opportunity to share in a group where we don't ask the questions about how many do you have and are you growing, but we simply ask the questions about what's God doing in your life and how are you developing and following him and how are you making disciples and how are you making the community better because the church is there. But absolutely. And, you know, some of it is perceived. I don't think all of it, I don't think the peers necessarily are always that hard on other guys, but I think guys expect them to be, and they feel a little insecure when they show up in a room and guys are beginning to tell stories and this great thing happened and we're up by 20 and we're up by 100 and here's our new children's work. And the guy's sitting there going, "I ain't got nothing. You know, yeah. we're 20 less than we were last year, so maybe I shouldn't even be here." I hear all the time when we go out and do conferences, they say, "Man, you know, what you're saying is so realistic. Usually when I go to a church growth conference, guess what? I go home feeling worse than when I went."
I think people like me contribute greatly to the problem. And what I mean by that, I am not at all against showing lists of largest churches or fastest growing churches. But when those are the only churches that are featured, for the most part, by any type of list, we are sending a very clear message that the fastest growing and the biggest are the best, and those who lead those are the best. So I've been a part of that for some time. I don't necessarily apologize for it, but I do really say that people like me need to show balance in giving recognition to others.
Coming soon, the fastest growing or fastest declining church list.
Oh, good gravy train.
That That wouldn't be good.
I'm not sure what a good exegesis this is, but you know, when those Jesus sent out those and they healed and they cast out demons and did all the great miracles and they came back and they were just celebrating to no end, you know, you would think that Jesus would say, hey, you know, give me some more stories and let's celebrate. But he didn't. Remember what he said? He said, don't celebrate that the demons were cast out and that people were healed. He said, celebrate what? That your name is in heaven.
Yeah.
And I just think, guys, we cannot find our celebration and our joy and our purpose in the results, because there'll come a day when the results won't be there. And our joy is only found in Christ.
And this fifth one is one we have mentioned before.
Yep. You may not be perceived to be as cool as a church planter. Cool factor.
Well, you won't. Although, you know, there's a little bit of this now that church replanting is becoming the flavor of the month. And so
you've made church replanting.
Yeah, that's your fault, Mark.
Yeah. And
you're
so,
like the Justin Timberlake of church replanting.
Oh, there's another great phrase. Can we put that maybe as our banner
on
the podcast?
Put a t-shirt on that, man.
Yeah.
Probably.
I am his fanboy. You know,
I
something like
it's
that.
More like
put that on the back of a book.
More like the Burl Ives Jonathan of Howe. Church planting. So replanting.
You are really showing your age.
I know.
I know the name. I don't know who the heck that is.
Great voice.
Great voice. What were we talking about?
The cool factor.
Oh, the cool factor. Yes, in church planting, there is that cool factor. Well, look, in church planting, the first people you have around you are your launch team, and they kind of like you, or they wouldn't be your launch team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have this vision, and they're all kind of excited about everything. You go to a dying church, and they like you for about the first sermon you preach, about halfway through it, and then they realize there's something you're doing that they don't like, and then the honeymoon's over. And so in that sense, it is a much, much more tough and difficult thing, because you're never at a place where you've got a lot of popularity if you're really trying to do what God wants you to do and make that change of that church. So you're not going to be cool. I mean, in that sense, you're not. But then again, that's so fleeting anyway, coolness. I mean, I had it once for about 2 weeks, 23 years ago. It was good while it lasted.
Never had it, never been cool.
It was over real quick.
In fact, my sons have always said, Dad, we've never known a cool period in your entire life.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, your life's not over yet.
Well,
yes,
who knows?
There's still time. I was going to ask you about that, though. Is that something that's kind of new, or was the cool factor an issue, you know, 20 years ago? Either one of y'all.
Cool factor, you're asking the senior adults in the room.
I am.
The cool factor 20 to 30 years ago was size of church.
Yes.
And so it was important that you went to a county seat church that was averaging 700 or more. That was kind of the pinnacle for many.
What made you cool?
That's what made you cool. It wasn't church planting. It wasn't church revitalization. It was climbing the ladder to the largest church. And those were the ones that were recognized.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks again to the North American Mission Board for sponsoring today's edition of Revitalize and Replant. And more than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committing to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches while simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new churches. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
Thank you again for joining us on this episode of Revitalize and Replant. I know you listeners are always glad when Mark Clifton joins Jonathan and me. It adds so much to the podcast, and I appreciate you being here for these and some others that we have done and will be doing, Mark. So thank you. And thank you, audience, for just being the faithful listeners you are. You are the reason that we continue to do this podcast, and we continue to serve you as we grow healthier churches together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rayner. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit tomrayner.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.